Well, dear students, welcome to Chapter 15 on stock options. And we start with a joke. So I think of the Warren Buffett joke, is attributed to Warren Buffett. And you may not understand what it means now, but I think by the time we're through, you'll probably get the point. At a very exclusive party, a high-class, finely clad woman slinked up to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company and said, "I will do anything, anything you want." The CEO flatly responded, "Reprice my options." You don't get the joke, but you will, hopefully you will. Slide number 2, folks, we're going to partake of an adventure. You're going to understand what an option contract is. A security that gives the holder the right to buy or sell a certain amount of an underlying financial asset at a specified price for a specified period of time. You don't actually buy the underlying asset. No, you buy the option to buy the asset. And they could be many different things, but we're just going to deal with stock options just to make things, you know, more concentrated, more pointed. But there are options on many different stuff, many different assets. Options contracts are not investments, folks. They are contracts between two investors. Now, they're a security, which means they can be traded, and there's a ready market for these things if they're, you know, if they're not, if they're worth anything. There's somebody who will buy them from you. And you're not buying an asset, folks. You're buying a contract between two different investors. There's a buyer of the option, and there's a seller of the option. So you understand what a contract is, an agreement between two different people or entities. The buyer of the option contract gets the right to buy or sell, and that's what makes, we're going to see options kind of tricky, because there's two ways that they can be created. They can be bought, or you can buy an option to buy, or you can buy an option to sell. Ay, 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 ay. The buyer of the option contract gets the right to buy or sell the financial asset at a given price for a given period of time. And the seller of the option contract must buy or sell, if it's a different type of option, the asset according to the terms of the contract. So the buyer gets the option to do something. They don't have to exercise it, and the seller is on the hook. If the buyer wants to exercise the option, the seller has to agree. They agreed that they would do that. Slide number 3. Options contracts are part of a class of securities called derivatives. Now, do you remember way back at the beginning of the semester, we talked about derivatives as one of the financial asset classes? Many people, yours truly, do not consider derivatives investments. They're not. They don't adhere to the very first slide. An investment is an instrument for which we push resources in with the reasonable expectation that it's going to return cash in the form of cash flows, rent, dividends, interest, and that its value will be reasonably upheld, or hopefully both. And derivatives don't fit that definition. But they are securities, and they can be bought and sold, and they are throughout the day. Options contracts, let's continue reading on slide 3, have no voting rights. They receive no dividends, they receive no interest, and they eventually expire. They poof, disappear. Their value comes from the fact that they allow the holder of the option to participate in the price behavior of the underlying asset with a much lower capital outlay. Now, what does that mean? You can participate in the success of a firm by coming up with 1/10 or 1/20 of the price of the stock. Sounds exciting. Yeah, wait till we get to it. And by the way, folks, let's stop using the term options contracts, because it's not easy to say. Many people just refer to them as options. But remember, they're not assets. They are contracts that are tied to an underlying asset. And they're just one form of derivative. There are dozens of different forms of derivatives. We will, after we're done with options, take a look at futures, which are another type of derivative. So let's continue on slide. Oh, by the way, you're going to have to go over this a couple of times, all right, folks? It's not something that is just people pick up just like that. It is, in fact, it's one of the toughest parts of the Series 7 exam, our options. Slide number 4. Options allow an investor to leverage their outlay of capital. There's that word again. Leverage. The ability to obtain a given equity position at a reduced capital investment, thereby magnifying our returns and potentially magnifying our losses. With options, you can make the same amount of money from a stock or other security as if you bought it for full price, but only come up with 1/10 or 1/20 or less of the money. Wait a minute. That sounds too good to be true, right? Yeah, well, you are right. It is too good to be true. Much of the time, you lose your entire outlay. Options have a time limit. Most options expire worthless. So you're buying something that has a pretty good chance of becoming worthless. Now, does that sound like an investment? No, that's a speculation. That's the nice word that we use instead of using the word gambling. Slide number 5. What is the rationale for options? Well, instead of buying a stock, you buy an option to buy a stock. Or maybe you buy an option to sell a stock. It's the same thing, but in reverse. If the stock goes up, let's say you bought an option to buy the stock. If the stock goes up, your option will go up almost always much, much, much faster. And then you can sell the option for a handsome profit. Or you can exercise the option and actually take possession of the stock. There's only one catch, though, folks. The option expires in 3, 6, 9 months. And if the stock don't go up, guess what happens to your option? It expires worthless. Surprise! And then you gotta go out and do it again. There are some scenarios where options can be worthwhile, dear students, but they are few and far between, in my humble opinion. Slide number 6. You see a stock that you really like that's selling for $20, and you are sure that this stock is going to zoom. So you buy one share of the stock for $20. Let's just make it easy, $20, right? If the stock goes to $30, you've earned $10 on a $20 investment. Now, if you do the arithmetic, that's a 50% return on your money. Not bad, right? You put up $20. You earn $10, 50% return on your money. But let's say you're a gambling type of person. You're a speculative investor, which is an oxymoron, right? You're a speculative trader. You're a speculative speculator. You buy the option to purchase a share of the stock at 20. You don't buy the stock, folks. You buy the option to buy the stock at 20. Sounds confusing. Well, it just means that you have the option to buy the stock at 20. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to exercise the option. Now, the option might only cost you $1. Now, you might want to write this number down. For the price of a single dollar, folks, you can buy the option to buy the stock at 20. Now, what happens if the stock goes to 30? What'll happen is your option will track the stock price. If your stock goes to 30, your option will probably go to 11. It'll go dollar for dollar, not always, but often, up to $11 for the option. And folks, you've earned $10 on a $1 investment. Do the arithmetic. That's 1,000% return on your value, on your money. That is leverage in action. You understand? Whoopee! Whoopee! Instead of turning $20 into $30, we turned $1 into $11, 6% return on your investment. Congratulations, dear friends. Pat yourself on the back. Slide number 7. But what if the stock price stays at 20 or goes down a little bit, or your option actually expires at the end of 3, 6, or 9 months and it's worthless? Yeah, you lost the dollar. And, of course, this is the way the world works. After your option expires, the stock price zooms to 40 bucks. Yep. You were so sure that this stock was going to hit the big time, and you were absolutely right. But because you bought an option that expired, you lost the ability to share in the success of the stock. So my advice, by the way, Peter Lynch says never invest in options, and who am I to argue with Peter Lynch? My advice is to forget about the option, buy the stock. It's a long-term investment. But since this is an introduction to investments class, we need to become proficient in the concepts, terms, and techniques of options, so let's get started. Slide number 8. Now, here's where you want to go to the website and print out the options note worksheet. What's it called? I forget what I call it. Options worksheet notes or whatever. It's a single sheet of paper, but it has all these terms stuffed onto it. And the idea is to make it look like a mirror, two different sides, because that's the problem with options. There are two different types of options, as we see on slide number 8. There are call options. Now, we've already heard that term, haven't we? Remember calling in the bonds? Right, exactly. And then there are put options, where we're going to put the stock to somebody else. Calling the stock is, the call option is when we call the stock away. Here's stock, come here stock. And put option is when we sell it to somebody else, we put it to them. The put call option contract is a negotiable interest that a negotiable instrument that gives the buyer of the option the right to buy the underlying security at a stated price within a certain period of time. And the previous example in the last three slides was a call option. And normally when people say I bought an option, they mean a call option. When people talk about options, they're usually talking about call options, unless they say I bought a put option. Because the call option buyer is expecting the price to go up. The put option buyer is expecting the price to go down. And the put option is a negotiable instrument that gives the buyer of the option the right to sell the underlying security at a stated price within a certain period of time. It's the mirror image. Instead of calling the stock away, come here stock, I'm going to buy you at a certain price, I'm going to put it. I'm going to sell it. And the traders, it's all electronic. They're all sitting in front of computers. But in the days in the pits, they would, when they called, they would pull their hands toward themselves. Come here, come here. You can't see me doing this, but I'm doing it. And then when they put something, they would put it to them. They would push. They would use their hands to push away from themselves. That means they're going to put it to somebody. Make sense? Okay. Slide number 9. I know it's confusing. Where do the terms call and put come from? And how will I remember which is which? Well, you've got to study this, especially if you're going to take the Series 7. But the term call comes from the idea that when you buy a call option, you get the right. You don't have to exercise that right. Have I said that before? I think I have. You get the right to call the stock away from the seller of the option. Whereas the put option comes from the idea that when you buy a put option, you get the right to put the stock to the seller. You can send it to them. You can say, here, you have to buy this. A call option allows you to call away the stock from somebody, buy it from them, and a put option allows you to put the stock to someone, sell it to them. So you got the idea? Keep that in your head. Have the printout in front of you, because we're going to go through each one now in detail, and it ain't going to be the first time and the last time. It's going to be the first time for you, but it's not going to be the last time. You're going to have to do it over and over and over again, because they're tricky. They're tricky. Slide number 10. The two parties of a call option. The buyer of the call option is the call option buyer. They're the person who will do the calling away. They don't have to exercise the right, but they buy the right to call the stock away from the call seller. In fact, as we said, often the options contract expires worthless because if the price doesn't go up, it doesn't make sense. If you bought an option to buy at 20 and the price goes down to 17, would you exercise the option? You can buy it at 17 on the open market. Why would you buy it for 20? So your option expires worthless. The seller of the call option, now here's where it gets confusing. He's also called the option writer. She's also called the option maker. So all three words are used, seller, writer, or maker. They are the person who must sell the stock. It will be called away from them. They are legally bound to sell the stock to the call buyer if the call buyer exercises the option, which they don't have to do. And well, what's in it for them, you might say? Well, remember the dollar that we talked about? They get the dollar. Yippee. They get the option price from the call option buyer. So they it's called the premium, and we'll take a look at that later. But they get the price of the stock, the price of the option, I'm sorry, price of the option, and they get to keep that no matter what happens. It may be called away from them, it may not be. You know, whatever. So, slide number 11. What is the call option buyer hoping for? Well, the call option buyer is hoping that the price of the stock will go up. A call option buyer is bullish. So if the option buyer has a call option to buy at 20 and the option goes to 30, I'm sorry, the price of the stock goes to 30, I apologize. The price of the stock goes to 30, the buyer can then buy a $30 stock for only 20 bucks. You understand? They can exercise the option, say, here, I want you to sell me the stock that's selling currently for 30 bucks. I want you to sell it to me for 20. And the seller option, the seller has to do it. That's the part of the contract. Now, the call option buyer doesn't have to exercise the option. They can just turn around and sell the option to somebody else. Because, remember, it's a security. It's tradable. It's negotiable. What is the call option seller hoping for? Well, obviously, they're hoping that the price doesn't go up. They're hoping that or stays the same. The call option seller is hoping that the price of the stock will go down or at least stay the same. So a call option seller is bearish or at least not very bullish, you know, neutral, or some people call them chickens, you know, because they don't care if it stays the same. If it stays at 20 bucks, then they don't lose anything. If it goes down, they don't lose anything. If the stock stays around 20 or goes down, the call option buyer will not want to exercise the option and it will expire worthless, and the call option seller gets to keep the price of the option. But they always, no matter what happens, they get to keep the price of the option. Now here's a graphic that hopefully helps folks. We're going to attack it from three different slides, and you have the handout that you've printed out, right? You want to take a look at that. Here's Ed and Ted. Here's Ed and Ted, and they look a whole lot alike, don't they? Yeah. The Ed is the call option buyer. He pays $20, which is the price of the option, for a $20 call option. So that means he has the option to buy that stock at 20 bucks. He didn't buy the stock, folks. He didn't buy the stock. He'd have to come up with $20 to buy the stock. All he has to do is come up with a buck to buy the option. And Ted is the call option seller. He gets that dollar. No matter what happens, he gets to keep the dollar. So now, what's going on with the call option buyer? The call option buyer, Ed, wants the price of the underlying stock to go up. He's bullish. So no matter what happens to the price of the stock, he can call it away from the seller for 20 bucks. Now, if the price goes to $30, yippee! He can buy a $30 stock for $20 and hang on to it or sell it. Or before the expiration, he can just turn around and sell the option to somebody else for a lot more money. Because if the price did go to 30 bucks, his option would go from a dollar to around $10, $11, $12. Not bad. Now, the call option seller, he doesn't want the price to go up. No, no, no. He wants it to go down or at least stay the same. He wants it to stay around 20 bucks. No matter what happens to the price of the stock, he must sell it to. It can be called away from him to the call option buyer for $20 if exercised. Now, he gets to keep the dollar bill that he originally got no matter what. You understand? But he's legally bound, so to speak, to sell the stock to the call option buyer at $20. So if the price goes to $100, oh well, he lost a lot of money. Slide number, so does that make sense? Study this slide. I hope it helps. I certainly hope it helps because it is tricky. It is tricky. But once you realize that it's a contract, folks, between two individuals, I think that really goes a long way to understanding how these things work. You're not buying the stock, you're buying the option to buy the stock. And if you're the seller, you're not selling the stock, you're selling the contract, and you're saying to the buyer, okay, I'll sell it to you no matter what happens at $20. If it goes down, you're not going to want to buy it from me, so I get to keep the money. Now it's through the looking glass. Now we have to look at everything through a mirror, because a put option, everything is the same except in reverse. It's all turned around, topsy-turvy. So that's why I have it. That's supposed to be a mirror in between the two on the. I know I can't draw, but it's all exactly the same except in reverse. The buyer of the put option is the person who will be selling the stock, putting it to the seller of the put option. I know it's confusing, right? They buy the right to put the stock to sell it to the put option seller. Again, they do not have to exercise this right, and remember that often the options contract expires worthless, so they don't have to exercise that right. But they get the right to sell the stock to the other side of the contract, and that's the options seller, the options contract seller. Yeah, they're selling a contract initially. Now, the put option buyer might sell the stock to the put option seller because that's their right. That's what they bought. The option seller, the option writer, the option maker, they all mean the same thing, is the person who must buy the stock. It'll be put to him or her. The put option seller is legally bound to buy the stock from the put option buyer, no matter what happens. The option buyer doesn't have to exercise the right, but they can, and the option seller is legally bound to satisfy that right. And what do they get out of the deal? They get the dollar. They get the price of the option. It's called the premium, actually, which we'll take a look at in the next session. But they get that buck. So, on slide 14, what is the put option buyer hoping for? Well, the put option buyer is hoping that the price of the stock will go down, right? The call option buyer was bullish. The put option buyer is bearish. If the option buyer has a put option to sell the stock at $20 and the stock price drops to $10, that person can sell a $10 stock for $20. And the put option seller is legally bound to buy it from them. So the put option seller is hoping that the price of the stock will go up or stay the same. So they're bullish, or at least not very bearish. If the stock stays around $20 or goes up, the put option buyer is not going to want to exercise the option. Why would you sell a stock that you could sell for $24? Why would you sell for $20? You wouldn't. You just would let the option expire. And no matter what happens, the put option seller gets to keep the price of the option. So we're going to have the exact same slide on slide number 15, the exact same, but instead it's a put option. So you see it looks exactly the same. In fact, the guys kind of look exactly the same, but this one's Fred and this one's Ned. And in this case, Fred is the put option buyer. He pays $1 for the right to put the stock to Ned. Ned gets that dollar, right? But now he's on the hook. If Fred wants to exercise his option and sell the stock at $20, Ned has to live up to his part of the bargain. He has to do it. He has to buy it from him. So the put option buyer wants the price of the underlying stock to go down. The put option buyer is bearish. And no matter what happens to the price of the stock, he can put it to the put option seller for $20. If it goes down to $10, yippee! He can sell a $10 stock for $20. What a deal. Or he could turn around and not bother to exercise the option. He could just sell the option to somebody else. The put option seller wants the price of the underlying stock to go up. he's bullish, or basically wants it to stay the same. If it stays the same, then the put option buyer won't exercise the option. No matter what happens to the price of the stock he must buy it from, it will be put to him, the put option buyer, for $20 if the option is exercised. In either case, he gets to keep the buck. And the put option contract is tied to the underlying stock, and it will vary up and down as the stock varies up and down. Does this make sense? You're going to have to go over and do it again. Yes, I know you are. Look, the first time I saw these things, I thought, this is gambling. And you know what? I still haven't changed my mind. This is gambling. Slide number 16. Time for questions on options. Options are confusing, aren't they? And yes, in fact, the section on options is one of the hardest parts of the Series 7 stockbroker exam. Another difficult part is the margin and shorting, which we'll do in a couple of in the next couple weeks or so. It's after this. Options sound like gambling. Am I right? Yes, they are, folks. They're a form of gambling. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins and somebody loses. In the next section, we'll see that there's a way you can use options as a form of insurance, but it's, you know, it's pretty expensive insurance. A family acquaintance once called me because, you know, he knew I was a broker and I was involved in this. Hey, Frank! Hey! I hear you can make a lot of money investing in options. And I said, wait a minute. Yes, you can make a lot of money. You can also lose a lot of money, but you can't invest in options. You can speculate in options. You cannot invest in something that has a 50, 60, 70% chance of being worthless in 3 months. That is not investing. Have you read The Intelligent Investor? Well, you don't need to read The Intelligent Investor to figure this one out. Oh, yeah, Mr. Graham was not a fan of options. It's interesting. The book has a quote from Warren Buffett, where it sounds like he's condoning at the very least options, but I think they're taking it out of context. So go back and listen to it and watch it and study it one more time and then another time and a third time, because you really should understand them, if only to learn that they're not for you. Maybe you do like to go to Vegas and pull on the one-armed bandits. Maybe you do, then maybe you'll like options because you don't have to go to Vegas. You don't have to go to the Indian gambling casinos. But I hope you won't do this, folks. But, hey, that's why there's chocolate, vanilla, and some people like strawberry. what can I say, you know? It's up to you. We don't teach you about syphilis so that you will go out and get syphilis. We teach you to be aware of the dangers involved. And that's why we're teaching you about options. To be aware of the dangers involved in options. And so that you can make intelligent choices. And please get off your soapbox, Piano. It's their money. Yes, I understand. Okay, in the next session, we'll go into even more detail about options, and look at some options strategies. I even hate to use that term. That's an oxymoron to me, options and strategies. Like the strategies about buying a lottery ticket or something like that. A little bit better, but not much. Okay, see you next time, folks.